Hey guys, I'm Dylan Stacy. I'm from Clarksville, Tennessee. I own and operate DNR Hardscapes. We are a veteran-owned company, veteran-ran, veteran-operated, and I am a hardscaper.
Dylan, thanks so much for joining us here, and let's get started to get to know more about yourself and how you got into this industry. Can you give a little background about yourself and how you started your company?
Man, I'm a pretty unique individual. I think after every hardscaper that I've ever watched, I am like very, very unique. So I was adopted. I've been through like a very rough childhood and stuff, but I was always that kid that was always maintaining straight A's. I played three sports. I played like every sport possible that I could. I worked three jobs in high school. I really worked myself to that work ethic. And at that, from a very young age, I was able to maintain that work ethic. Well, I got a full ride scholarship to University of Arkansas. I went pre-med. I was like, full ride scholarship. I was like, man, I was like, this is what I want to do. Well, I went to like 3 years of pre-med and was like, man, I was like, I'm done with school. So I joined the Army. So I was a sniper in the U.S. Army, which is what brought me to Clarksville, which is where I'm where I live now. I was stationed at Fort Campbell. I went through 3.5 years of the military, got out, was like, man, I was like, I got to find my niche. I got to find what I'm good at. Well, after I got out of the Army, I was like, I think every Army personnel, any military personnel has that really hard phase of transitioning from military life to civilian life. I went through like some private contracting. I got deployed to Kuwait. I had a daughter on the way, and I was like, man, I was like, I've just got to find something. I got to find something I need to do. So me and my wife, Emily at the time, we started a business. I started a home decor company, and I started doing woodworking. We started making these boxes, and it kind of projected me into an entrepreneur spirit. I was like, man, I was like, I don't have to answer to anybody. I'm working for myself. This is what I do. And I was super, super excited. And then after about 2 years of doing that, we perfected it. We grew it into a $500,000 business within like 2 years. And I found out, I was like, man, I was like, I'm really good at business. I was like, I got to do something. Well, me, from my earlier stages, we lived on a farm. I worked at a cell barn selling cattle. I mean, I worked at turkey barns. I cut grass. I ran equipment, bucked hay. I was like that kid with a great work ethic. Well, that kind of transitioned me into, after I decided, I was like, I got to find something for myself, something that I enjoy. So I looked back everything that I did, and I was like, man, I used to love running skid steers. I used to love doing this stuff. Well, thankfully, the business that I had beforehand projected my credit into establishing a new business, something that was for me, that was mine, that's something I could do. So I literally went out and bought an $80,000 skid steer. I had a Ford Raptor at the time, by the way, which couldn't even haul the skid steer. I just jumped into it, and I was like, man, I was like, I've got to do something for myself. I got to be outside. I got to get my hands dirty. And I just bought a skid steer. And at that point in time, as soon as my skid steer was delivered, I started networking. I started shooting emails to companies in town, to landscapers, to retailers, to everything. I was like, hey, this is who I am. This is what I'm doing. I'm going to start doing some excavation work, some skid steer work, blah, 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 blah. Long story short, I got an email back from A&R Stoneworks here in Clarksville, Tennessee, and the owner reached out to me, and he was like, hey, I've got to meet with you. And I was like, all right, man. I was like, cool. I was like, this is a cool opportunity. Like, I've sent out 100 of these. Like, somebody messaged me back. And I met with PJ Short. I'm sure a lot of people know PJ. PJ is a very great guy. PJ is 100% the reason I am hardscaping now. He met with me, and he's like, hey, man. He's like, you need to be a hardscaper. I was like, dude, I don't even know what a hardscaper is. I was like, I don't know anything about this. And he's like, this is what it is. This is what we do. This is how it is. And he's like, I'll send you to a class. See what you like. See how you do it. And then I went to that first class, and I have never looked back. And I started my business only 2.5 years ago. I did not do landscaping beforehand. I was like that guy that literally went immediately into hardscaping. And I love hardscaping. I love everything what it's about. But honestly, it was just a coincidence that just happened through an opportunity, and it kind of perspired me into being a hardscaper. And thankfully for PJ reaching out to me, giving me the time of the day, and within 3 years, you know, we have exploded. My group of guys that I have working for me, My team, my retailers that I have here in town, my customer base is just absolutely amazing. And that's kind of what really projected me into doing hardscaping, like right then and there.
Man, and there's so much to unpack in what you just said there. So let's kind of go through some things here. It's definitely one of the most unique stories we've had on the podcast. Usually it's, you know, that typical road of I had a lawn care business, I went into hardscaping. No, yours is a completely unique story. First off, I am Canadian. I'm not American, but I can respect your time spent in the Army. And thank you for your service doing that. In terms of, you know, you have, I'm sure there's people listening to the podcast that have had a time in the Army and they had that struggle with the transition like you had. What kind of advice do you give them to kind of get out there and to do their thing and to find something that they're passionate about after their time spent in the Army?
Well, me, I mean, I went into the Army with like an open-headed. I wanted to do a lot of things in the Army. I wanted to be a Ranger. I wanted to be Special Forces. I had a little bit of medical. I had really bad hearing. I was born with it. I'm supposed to wear hearing aids. I don't wear them, but I'm supposed to be wearing hearing aids. So there was a lot of limitations that I had to overcome in the military. And a lot of personnel have those issues. A lot of people have bad backs, bad knees. Their run times are bad. And in the military, you're literally taught to overcome those. And the problem is when people get out, they don't understand the stuff that they went through in the military to get them to persevere them. They just think once they get out, you know, I'm a veteran, you know, like hire me. That's not what it's like. I'm a white male that is very athletic and very smart. I applied to like 10 different police departments and I did not get picked up. And I had the highest test scores all around with PT tests. Education test. And it was very disappointing because when people get out, you know, the first step is like everyone thinks go military or go private, go police departments or go like private contracting, do something that goes along those lines. And honestly, that's the worst way to go. You got to think outside the box. The military does a really great job of transitioning people. But the problem is, especially me being infantry, I was a sniper for 2 years. And the problem with us is we're so egotistical. Like we're so in our ways, like we're military, we're infantry, like we're awesome. What they don't understand is that doesn't transition to the civilian world. No one knows what you do. You have to separate yourself. The best advice that I can give to anyone in the military is networking. Is that excelled me so much. Learning how to talk to people, learning how it's not about your education. It's not about what you did in the Army. No one cares. One of my good buddies, he was a Ranger, had scuba school. I mean, he was everything in the military that like everyone strived to be. And man, this dude for the last like 3 years have tried to find him place in the civilian world. So it's not about what you did in the military world. It's about taking the techniques that you learned from the military to actually transition it into the civilian world. You have to know, like, getting out of the military, nobody likes civilians. Like, we're all used to that Army life. Like, it's like, man, these people are complaining about phones. Like, man, we didn't have bathrooms for like 2 to 3 weeks. We had to stay outside. Like, people start thinking themselves as something more important than civilian world, and you can't do that. You have to level head. You have to use what you learned from the military to actually excel you, networking people, learning like all those different techniques that you use through everything that you did. I mean, PMCS in a truck, which is pretty much you just go through a truck and you do the fine details, like it has all the lug nuts, like it starts. It you just got to use those small details that you used to actually transition into a civilian world. And I mean, that's what I did. And it superly excelled me into doing what I'm doing now, like being on time. In the military, you weren't allowed to be late. You were always 15 minutes early. You would not believe how many times I've gone to customers' houses, how I've been 15 minutes early, how I've actually showed up, or how I've returned a phone call. All that spans back to the military. You weren't allowed to be late in the military. So 15 minutes early, if you're not 15 minutes early, you're late. Just using those small things that you were instilled in to actually transition over to anything you want to do, a job interview, be 15 minutes early, study beforehand. You're not going to go out on a patrol in the military and not study the terrain. You're not going to study what you're doing. You're not going to know. So why go into a job interview and not know the job you're interviewing for? That would probably be the biggest piece of advice that I would get is actually study, use those small techniques that you use to actually transition into the civilian lifestyle.
Yeah, that's beautiful, man. That's great advice. And continuing on with your story, you said you bought a skid steer. That's like a deep dive into, you know, wanting to get into, you know, and you didn't even know hardscaping at the time. So you kind of dove deep into, you know what, I'm going to do something outside. What prompted you to do something like that? Was that like sort of a kick in the butt where you're kind of forcing yourself to now get out there and do something? Is that what kind of that purchase was, or what was that?
Well, I was kind of stuck in a rut. Like I said, I started that business, you know, a couple years prior to it, and I like perfected it. I'm a very, not to be like pompous or anything like that, but I'm a very smart individual. Like there's multiple things that I have to be doing at one time. I can't be like in a steady office job. I can't be sitting behind a desk. I can't just be focusing on one thing. Like I'll be honest, when I'm working at night, I can like read a book while doing quotes. Like my mind has to really operate on like multiple different levels. So once I perfected my other business, I got to a point like I've got to do something. Also a little bit of background. I'm like, I was a math major, but I'm also like really good with numbers. There's times I quiz my guys and stuff just out on the job site. Like I can do stuff in my head that a lot of people can't. So for me, I had to justify the purchase of a skid steer. I had to be like, all right, I bought a 238 skid steer, New Holland, C238. And it was like $80,000. My payments were like $1,100 a month. And I was like, all right. I was like, I've got to do like two jobs a month. That's it. Like one day, two jobs a month. And I was like, I've got to do something. I got to get out there. I can do this. Like Facebook Marketplace, man. I used to like whore myself out on Facebook Marketplace. Like I would make so many posts about stuff and it really paid off. I mean, like people don't understand Facebook Marketplace is free. The friends that you add on Facebook is free. That's free advertisement, man. Go through and start just adding a bunch of people. That's a big tip, by the way. Take that to the grave. I bought this skid steer and I had to justify it. I had a daughter. I was like $1,000 a month. Like, I mean, over the total cost, you know, it was like $1,500 after insurance and stuff like that. And I was like, I can make $1,000 a day just running this skid steer. And I was like, I know how to operate it. I know how to do this. And that was the big justification, is making the price fit the job. And once I started, you know, I did some very small jobs. I lived in a pretty big subdivision at the time. So I started clearing my own property. I started taking pictures of what I was doing, videos of what I was doing, and just posting those. And people, like even our neighborhood, would hire me. They're like, hey, do to my property what you did here. It's just making those very small steps. And buying a skid steer is a very big step. But I will say I did have a very good established credit. I was able to get like a 0% interest on the skid steer. So to me, I just had to justify that payment. That was my first step. Once I could justify that first payment, all was good from there. If I worked 2 days a month and I justified that payment, I mean, that's it. That's all I had to do. So I set my goals really low for that payment. But also in realization, I still had another business that was financially backing me in case that business didn't go well. So I did say that I took a big leap in buying a skid steer because I have no idea what I was getting into, but I also made it justifiable from my other business to make it work, income fit the needs for that business.
Yeah. And you know, you talked, it's obviously that I'm going to, you know, take a guess and say you're a pretty competitive person based on being athletic, being in the Army and all your experience. Obviously you're a high level operator. What is it about, you talked about networking at the very beginning, and you know, as soon as you got that skid steer, you reached out, you hit up a bunch of people. What is the mindset behind networking? Because I feel like it just doesn't happen as much in this industry, and I think that's like the biggest thing that people should be doing. So can you speak a little bit on why you took, you know, a lot of your time to just send out emails to network?
I will say this. I mean, I've been to a lot of conferences. I'm a Bellguard authorized contractor. I'm also a Techo Pro. I'm trying to get my UniLock representation as well. But I've been to a lot of these conferences. I've met with a lot of people. And I will say, hands down, 95% of hardscapers are very egotistical. So to me, your hardscapers are not your clientele. That is people are very intimidated going into like a hardscaping conference, going to meet Belgar does a round table where they get a bunch of these hardscapers together. And man, what I've gathered from a lot of these things is that like people that are there have perfected their ways. They're not really looking for other input. They're looking to add their input. And just people remember that starting off, like you can take tidbits from these things, stuff that they've done wrong. They want to give their input, like take that to heart. But remember, you're not selling a job to a hardscaper. You're selling your job to clientele, a customer, somebody that doesn't know anything about hardscaping, somebody that's never done this before. And when I say networking, I don't mean other hardscapers per se. It is great to learn stuff from them. It's great to take stuff from them. It's great to see where they've gone wrong as a business side of things. But when you're trying to sell something, you're not selling to these other guys that are producing this content, that are giving you little tips here and there. The tips and stuff that you take away from them is what you're going to produce to your customer. So when you go to a customer, they're quite frankly are idiots to the hardscaping world. They don't know how much base it takes. They don't know how much freeze it to lay in. They are liable as sending a message out, hey, you drove by a site today, steep slope. Look on Google Maps, man. Find that guy's information. Like, be a creep about it. Send that guy an email. Send that guy a letter in the mail and being like, hey, this is who I am. This is what I'm doing. I noticed you had a really bad erosion problem on the front side of your property. Like, it's as simple as that. Emails, messages, calls, stuff like that. You're not face-to-face with somebody. Start there. Start with the email. Start with the Facebook messages. Start with text messages. Something that, like, gets you in a conversation with that person. Learn more about that person. Then when you get face-to-face with that person, you can take what you've learned from the prior messages to transfer over into that face-to-face conversation. So networking isn't just with hardscapers. Networking is with anybody. I network. I know all of my suppliers in town. Kenny Pipe here in town, they are my pipe supplier for all my perforated pipe, my PVC pipe. Man, I know that guy very well. I can call him up, be like, this is what I need. He'll have it on a truck literally ready for me in like 30 minutes. Home Depot. I know all the girls and guys that work at the pro desk. It's just producing yourself in a way that's approachable. Don't be a butthead, honestly. Like, be approachable. Have a smiling face on you. It gets you a very long way in the customer relations aspect.
Yeah, and one of the first posts I did on howtohardscape.com has to do with networking, and it has to do with, you know, if you're just starting out, you're trying to get work, reach out to every asphalt company out there because they're going to be doing driveways and they're going to need front walkways replaced or fixed or repaired. You know, and reach out to all your suppliers and everything you said there. And there's so much value in networking. It's not just about networking with hardscapers, like you said, but networking with anybody that can kind of, you know, give back to your business in some sort of way.
Well, especially like me, I never did landscaping. So one thing that really excelled me was networking with landscapers. A lot of these guys, you know, they've been mowing yards for years. They've been doing the mulch beds for these high-end customers. And they always needed someone like, hey, I want a retaining wall done. I want a patio done. Well, they didn't do them. So I networked myself with them. I was like, hey, you know, I don't do landscaping. You know, maybe you can do the bushes and I can do the patio. I would say probably, I mean, four or five of my really good friends are landscapers. One of them, Mil-Spec Landscaping. Me and him have worked really tight together. And man, that guy's got me more jobs than probably myself has even gotten me. And just because he's a very premier landscaper that doesn't do hardscaping. And networking with those landscapers is the big one, especially if you're a sole hardscaper. If you start doing landscaping, they start getting a little greedy and they think that you're treading on their toes. But I mean, like me, if a landscaper ever gets me the job, I'm not going to do landscaping myself. I'm going to bid it out, have them do it. But I will say landscapers are probably one of my biggest contributors to my jobs and my leads, because all the guys are there mowing yards weekly. They're seeing the yard. They're seeing the irrigation. They're seeing the needs that are met. And most people that have their yards mowed probably aren't in like low poverty like states. So most of them are having their yards mowed, are getting that nice cream of the crop, you know, stripes in their lawn and stuff like that. They're going to want to spend the money to actually do pavers versus like something like concrete. So I guess a big tip that I would have is networking and knowing your landscapers in your area.
Yes, absolutely. And yeah, talking about services, I know you guys don't just do hardscaping anymore. And we talked a little bit about that before the episode, and I've seen your stories. So what services is your business offering at this point? And what services are you looking to offer in the near future?
So when we started, we did everything. We did everything from drainage jobs, like when I say drainage jobs, I mean like soil drainage, soil irrigation, soil sod, fencing, man, anything that I could do to network, honestly. I had my hands in everything. I found guys that I could sub stuff out to. I found guys to hire that knew something about something. As we transitioned through the years, I have found it very difficult to just sell hardscaping, especially in my area. I'm farther down south. I'm the Tennessee area, so it stays a lot warmer down here. A lot of people do not see the value in pavers. There is probably I have maybe one to two competitors in Clarksville in our area with hardscaping. But my big competition is concrete companies, and there's probably 1,000 of them. Like, I mean, I'm telling you, you put a post on Facebook about needing concrete and there'll be 1,000 comments on it. So my big competitor here is selling someone the value of pavers versus the value of concrete. Because down here, we don't have the freeze and thaw like a lot of the northern states do that can't go with concrete, that has to go with asphalt, that has to go with pavers. So for us, our big competitive is concrete, guys, because we have to sell the value of that versus the value of concrete. So as we transitioned on, that was a big competitor. So if somebody wanted like a 30 by 30 patio, I was triple, quadruple times a concrete patio. And these people were like, nah, like I ain't spend that money on that, blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay. So I had to find my niche. I had to find what suited me, what fell into place. So as of lately, as of this year, all we are starting doing is hardscaping projects, but we do full turnkey projects. That is where we found our niche, was full turnkey. We don't do just drainage. We don't do just hardscaping. We don't do just sod. So we did full turnkey. So if we did a patio for you, we were doing the drainage. We were doing the sod. We were doing the fencing. We were doing everything that included on that, because I hired a team last year to take over my social media. They took over my photography. It's a real estate photographer. Cultivated Visuals here in Clarksville. They built my website. They've done everything for me. And I paid these guys really good money to go finish my products. But what happened was I was doing a patio and they're like, oh, we'll hire our own sod guy. And like the sod wouldn't get in. I'd take pictures and there'd be dirt all around it. So I was like, nope. I was like, this ain't for me anymore. I'm going to transition into full turnkey. So I started doing full turnkey and the projects came a lot faster. I was realizing like somebody doesn't want to deal with 10 different people. Somebody doesn't want to deal with a landscaper that may not show up or an irrigation guy that doesn't show up. So we started doing these full turnkeys and that transitioned into pools. And I will say, as a hardscaper, all you guys hardscapings that are listening to this, try selling a $30,000 patio versus selling a $100,000 pool. You will sell your $100,000 pool all day long versus a $30,000 patio. And that was just a lesson that I learned. I had a PJ Short here in town, you know, he was like, hey, he's like, why don't you sell a pool for me? I was like, you know what? I'll do it. That's easy. We started off selling fiberglass pools, through them, through AR Stoneworks here in town. And it just, I mean, it boomed. Last year around this time was our first, last February. So a year and a half ago was our first pool install. And since then we probably installed 20, probably around 15 projects. And it's not us just digging a hole, sticking a pool into it. We sell the full turnkey package, from permits to electrical to plumbing to everything. And man, when I transitioned into the pool phase, it expelled my hardscaping phase. So like, I don't sell just a pool with concrete. I sell a pool with pavers. And if you have a great crew with you, they're going to know how to do the whole project. So you're able to make more profit off of it, because your same guys are digging the pool. Your same guys are plumbing the pool. Your same guys are basing the pavers, laying the retaining walls that goes to pools, installing the waterfalls. So you're able to keep that same group of guys on a job and not have to hire a bunch of subcontractors to do this. Because I'll be honest, the pool is the easiest part of anything that we do. Digging the hole, getting the grade set. I mean, we do that all day long with pavers. And so as of now with this year, I've really transitioned to just pools. Or unless it was a very substantial size patio project with like bars, pergolas, stuff like that. I'm trying to get totally into the fiberglass pool market. Now, as I say that, I am transitioning more into by next year doing full gunite pool projects with hardscaping. So our bread and butter is hardscaping. But in order to get that clientele, to get the jobs that you want, to get the market and the money margins that you want to get, pools was by far the best thing I ever did in my life. And it's the easiest thing we've done. And just the clients that want pools, that know the value in pools, know the value in the hardscaping. And using, instead of using, you know, one product versus another, instead of using tile versus veneer or doing stack stone versus mortar, these guys know that stuff. When you're spending $100,000 to $300,000 on a pool project, these customers do their research. They know they don't want concrete right next to their pool. They know they're putting a pool in. They're not going to leave in a couple years. So they want something that's lasting. They want something that stays there. And it really, really projected my hardscaping business into other things. I have people reaching out to me all the time. Just, hey, I want pavers for my patio. I don't want concrete. Hey, I want this retaining wall because I know it can hold a pool back. That's what I want in my backyard. So that's kind of where we've grown over the last year and a half. And just pretty much that's our direction right now. By next year, that's kind of my mindset, and that's kind of where I want to go from here.
That's awesome. And in the same area where we are, we've seen the pool market really take off. And when it comes to a client wanting a pool from us, we subcontract that out. And there's a big jump between doing that and then to be able to offer that service. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of pros that come with, you know, offering that service that you've highlighted there. Besides all of that, is it a distinguisher for you and your company to be able to offer this service to the customer instead of saying, hey, we're going to subcontract this out? Do you see less friction coming from that sale from a customer as opposed to subcontracting that out?
I don't think it's the fact of subcontracting it out. It is to the customer. It's the fact of dealing with one person. Mm-hmm. So if I do hire, I've got a great subcontractor here, Sturdy Fence and Deck. He does my decks. He does my fencing. And he may bid a project, and then I'm going to go in and bid the project with a patio to include the fence. When I hire him, the customer doesn't deal with me and him. They deal with me. So I think to the customer, it's not about subcontractors, it's about who you're using, who you're there. They want to be able to text you and be like, what's getting done today? Hey, why is the electrician not here? They want that one person to go through. They want that one person to deal with. So I say anybody using subcontractors, yes, make sure that your subcontractors are aware of what they're doing. Make sure that the customer asks them questions directly. They know what they're talking about, but also realize that customer has your contract. So that customer deals with you. That customer has any questions, it's directed towards you. And that was one of the big things that all my customers love is they know, like instead of piecing all this stuff together, they can deal with me directly. I'm gonna know where my fence guys are. I'm gonna know where my plumbers are. I'm gonna know where this crew is out for that. I'm gonna know when they're gonna be there. So they're not texting 10 different numbers, like on a pool project. I mean, in reality, you could have a subcontractor digging the pool. You could have some contractor installing the pool, a subcontractor plumbing the pool, a subcontractor hooking up gas, a subcontractor hooking up electrical. It's like building a house. When somebody builds a house, they don't go talk to the electrician. They don't go talk to the framers. They don't go talk to the foreman perhaps, but they don't go talk to, you know, the masons. They talk to the builder. And that's one thing that I think that every person that's dealing with a big size project that deals with a lot of subcontractors, you don't have to do it yourself. If you do it yourself, you make a lot more profits. But if you don't want to take that hassle, if you don't want to take that responsibility, just make sure that the customer is aware that they're dealing with you, that you're their person. You're going to answer their call if they have questions. If they're hesitant on a decision or something like that, you're going to be the one there guiding them through that process.
Absolutely. And then continuing with that customer, let's talk about where your leads are coming from these customers at this point in your business. We talked about kind of the beginning hustle of your business, but what about nowadays? Where are these leads coming from?
Man, I would honestly say probably 90% of my leads come from word of mouth. When I first started, I got into a lot of bigger subdivisions here in Clarksville. There's a big subdivision that has like 200-300 houses, very tight-knit community, very prestigious community. And I've done probably 30 projects in that one neighborhood. And I will say probably of those 90% words of mouth, these people are reaching out to me on Facebook. And the reason they're reaching out to me on Facebook is because people sharing stuff on Facebook. What I've realized over the growing of our business, Facebook is where leads come from. It's such a crazy world that I don't understand that people haven't tapped into. If I could give any hardscaper advice, start adding a bunch of friends, guys. Go to your local groups, find realtors, add a bunch of realtors, add a bunch of people with a lot of friends. Just start at, it's free, man. It's like you can have up to 5,000 friends in your hometown. Like it is free to add somebody and hopefully they accept your request. I think that's the most cheapest, easiest thing you can do, and start doing quality projects. Start posting those quality projects because all those 5,000 friends are going to see what you're going to do, and then they're going to see your name, and then somebody's going to ask on one of their little certain groups, like, hey, I'm needing a retaining wall done. They'll be like, oh, I'm actually friends with this guy. He did this retaining wall not too long ago. But I would say probably 90% of it is words of mouth, but that 90% is almost from Facebook, from people sharing stuff, sharing in their private subdivision groups. Sharing it through Messenger, sharing it through that. I've run a bunch of ads and stuff. I don't get a lot of feedback. And I've got a social media team that does a great job for me. They do some great posts and stuff. I've even got a website that, you know, goes on there and goes full into detail, your address, your budget, what you want to do, big gallery. Man, that's only about 10% of actually my full leads. But 90% of them is just word of mouth. Doing a good job. Getting your name out there. Networking. Just like I said, Facebook, dude, you can share posts all day long. Add friends, share it to groups. You got local groups in your town. Like here in Clarksville, we got like Clarksville Sales. We got Clarksville Chat. We've got Fort Campbell yard sale pages. Add all those groups, man. Just start making posts on them. Start getting – just because that post doesn't get anything, people's going to recognize your name. And by somebody recognizing your name, it's just like people do for elections. You see these signs everywhere, all over elections. When you go to the polls, you're like, I don't know any of these guys. Oh man, but I saw that guy's name going in here. So I'm just going to vote for that guy just because I know the name. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much where all of our leads come from. I think we do a really good job with our customers. Our customers do a good job referring us. We've got a bunch of friends, a bunch of family that just are associating us with projects that we've done before. Do quality work, man. Make sure you get those 5-star reviews. Make sure if you upset someone, fix it. Even if it costs you a little bit, that costing you a little bit, that person's going to remember you and they're going to make sure to recommend you for that next job.
Yeah, absolutely. So as soon as one of these potential customers contacts you, can you walk us through what you're doing there? How do you make sure that they might be a right fit for you? Scheduling a consultation, you know, where do you take that initial contact when a customer contacts you?
So pretty much vetting our customers. I mean, I think everybody does it. I mean, with the hardscaping world, you got to understand there's some parts of town that you're not going to be installing hardscaping on. I am the guy that I reply back to everything. I may automatically see it and I may deny it right then and there. But I always reply back to that customer no matter what. I never left something unread. I never leave a lead unfollowed. Because I will say this, 2 years ago, my very first pool that I ever installed, I got a lead. This woman messaged me, and I'll never forget it the rest of my life. And she sent me her address. She's like, hey, we're looking for a pool, you know, blah, blah, blah. And at that point in time, I was really hurting for jobs. I was like, man, I was like, we're in like February timeframe. I was like, it's getting winter. You know, I'm trying to find some jobs to match up. And I almost didn't go this job. It was in a very bad part of town. I looked up their house. I looked up their parcel. I looked up their property taxes. And I was like, man, I was like, these people, there ain't no way we can even fit a pool in their backyard. But I was like, you know what? I'm going to go do it. I sold a $170,000 pool project to that person. And at that point in time, I realized, I was like, nah. I was like, it's not about who's doing this, who's doing that. It's about how you can sell it. If somebody doesn't like what you're doing, then your story is not good enough. And I've always lived by that for a very long time. So with doing that, I vet these customers by looking at a lot of different things. I ask them a ton of questions. Don't automatically look at their address. Don't automatically look at their side of town they're on. Don't automatically look at their property value. I've learned the hard way that way. The big things that you want to do is ask a lot of questions. Do they know what they want? Do they know how much they want to spend? Give them prices of stuff that you're doing. Give them rough estimates. But like most of my pool projects, when somebody messages me, I immediately tell them, I was like, most of our pool projects start off around 75,000. They go up to 150. But when you say that stuff, it scares people. So you have to add a story to that. You have to add, well, yeah, our pools are 75 to 150, but we're full turnkey. You don't deal with other customers. We don't come dig a hole, throw a pool in. You get full turnkey. You don't have to do anything. We do take care of all your permits, electrical, plumbing, any fees associated, your fencing if you need that, retaining walls. We're your one-stop shop. So people start seeing the value in your story. So I always reply back to messages. On my website, I've got a place where they fill out the budget, where they fill out their time frame when they do that. Man, when somebody gives me $1,000 budget and they give me a 1 week time frame, it's really hard for me to reply back to that. But take advantage of that. Tell them, be like, hey, I'm a prestigious company. Like, this is the stuff that we do. We are booked out, 3 to 4 months. This is kind of the quality we can give you. If you're willing to wait, I'd be happy to come out and just chat with you. So that's kind of the steps that I've kind of taken. Like, a lot of people are really adamant on looking at people's property values, looking on their Facebook to see what kind of people they are. Man, I'm not one of those persons that judge a book by their cover because it's bit me a few times. And I was like, you know what? I'm never going to do that again. And I'm actually going to give everybody that time of day. And by doing that, also, you build that relationship with that customer, even if they don't go with you. They could go with another company. I've had two other people this year in the last 2 months that has actually went with a different company. One in Hendersonville and one in there's a subdivision outside of town. Both of them have went with a different pool company, but I've gotten two jobs from those two companies based off of my interactions that I had with them from one of their neighbors. So don't take it. Don't start looking too deep into it. Don't start, looking at financials. Is this worth my time? A message takes you 10 minutes, man. A message takes you 5 minutes. You build that relationship with that person and it could project you for that job. It could project you to further jobs. They're going to remember your name and it's just networking. That's all it is. It takes 10 minutes of your time. Stay up a little bit later, reply, get a very in-depth, very professional message back to them. And I guarantee you, they will remember that.
So how do you say no to a customer? If they message you, they call you, it's not the right job, it doesn't suit you guys, you can't fit it into your schedule in time, or you even go there for that initial meeting and as soon as you see it, it's a no. How do you say no to a customer?
Man, that's tough. I've always been working on that. I've been working on that for the past couple of years and it's tough. I will say this, it's very bad to say, but there's always a price for any job. And people have to realize that. If you go up to a job site and the customer is being very difficult, you see that they're wanting things a very, very particular way. You don't have precedence. You're not a judge. You're not a jury. You don't have precedence based on price. Just because you charge somebody $15 a square foot doesn't mean you have to charge him $15 a square foot. Take those things into consideration. Always give people a price. If they don't like it, then that's their own provocative. If they do, you made sure to bid that job to fit those criteria. I'm not one. I don't like saying no. It's just like if anybody asks me if something's for sale, everything's for sale with a price. And the same thing goes for myself and my guys. I mean, my guys put up with it just as much as I do with bad customers, with guys that are just, you know, like, man, I should have never taken this job. But you have to realize that up front. You have to realize that you have to sell yourself, and you also have to make sure that it's worth that to you. So if you know a customer is going to be bad, if you know that this isn't a job that you want, reach out, man. Reach out to subcontractors. Reach out to another hardscaping company. Be like, hey, this is a project I have going on. This is what we're dealing with. I don't want any part of it. Would you want to collaborate on it? Would you guys want to take this over? I don't like saying no, because when you say no to someone, it's a very bad head turn to me. And that person, you say no to them, they may not recommend you to their neighbor that wants a $500,000 pool project. That person may have a dad that needs a whole new barn built that wants pavers all in it. And those are true stories. So I'm not one, I don't like saying no. I just always, I make sure I'm very professional, and I make sure I put a price on my time.
I like that. And when I was first starting out in business, I worked for a supplier beforehand. So I had all these contractors that I knew. And that goes back to networking. One of the guys there was sending me work because he said the exact same thing. I don't want to ever say no. So these jobs, they don't fit what we're doing right now. They're perfect for you, because, and I'm handing them to you because I never want to tell a customer no. So I always kind of took that and kind of applied that to my business. And it's great to hear you saying this similar thing in that sense.
I mean, to me, when you tell a customer no, you lost a job. Hmm. It's not because he chose somebody else. It's because you chose not to have that job. And you could, by saying no, you could turn down 10 other jobs that would have led from that job. So it's like, to me, like, even if you don't say no, put a price on it or find somebody that'd do it just as good as you do, that you can still say yes to it.
Now, what are some customer red flags that you meet them on the job site, the initial meeting? What are some red flags? You pointed out about one about a customer wanting something really particular. What are some red flags that make you think, okay, I need to price this appropriately, because this will take me more time to be making it exactly to the way the customer wants, or you know what, this might not be a client that I want to take on and I might want to pass it to somebody else. What are those red flags?
Well, I will say one thing that I've learned over the past couple of years is, especially as a hardscaper, you always ask them, do they mow their own lawn? When you can judge a lawn, when you pull up to a house and it's got those nice stripes in there, it's nice manicured, it's nice and watered and all that stuff, and if they hired somebody, you can get away with it. If that guy took care of his own lawn and he looks that guy, that's going to be a very big red flag for me, because I know he's very particular. I know he's going to be mad when my project takes 3 to 4 weeks and he has a muddy mess in his backyard. That's one big one. I've learned that over time. Like those guys that, or at the wives, I've had wives too, that they do their own lawn. They do all their own landscaping. They're very particular. They don't hire other people. With hardscaping, a lot of DIY people cannot do hardscaping, so they have to hire somebody else. You just have to take that into consideration, that these people are very particular. You're going to have to spend extra money on geomats. You're going to have to spend extra money on sod. You're going to have to fix those ruts. You're going to have to wait for dry season. You're going to have to make sure to put in your contract every rain day equals 3 no working days. You're going to have to give this customer a very big heads up about your scheduling, about how hardscaping works. Hey, it doesn't get done overnight. That's a big one when it comes to the lawn. Man, there's not a lot of red flags. I'm a very good people person. I feel like I can talk to anyone. Red flags to me doesn't really pop up a lot, because I've learned over time through the military, through college, through running a business, running another business, everybody's different. Everybody's particular about one thing versus the next. Like I've gone to projects where the customer's like, I don't care, do it. And I got to pick everything. I got to pick the fire pit. I got to pick, you know, the bar, the type of block, the colors, everything. I've also been to projects where the customer was like, we got to have this. It's got to have this radius. It's got to have this many cuts. Like they had 3D rendering done before I even got there. So it's not, to me, it's not a red flag. You just have to conform to the customers that you're selling to. So red flags to me isn't as common as I think it would be probably most people. I have a lot of anal people that are very very cautious about their grass. They're very cautious about their driveways. You just have to make accommodations for that. You have to let them be upfront with you about their problems. Like, we got a pool going in August 10th, and the guy is like, do not get on my driveway. Do not step. I don't want a truck parked on my driveway. I don't want machines going over my driveway. I don't do anything. And I look, and the guy's got a 12-foot access on his other side of his house. We got to take out a fence panel. I just have to make those accommodations that I got to replace that sod. I've got to rake everything out. You just have to fill out your customer. You got to know your person that you're selling yourself to, because you're not selling just a job. You're selling yourself. So, man, I don't see a lot of red flags. I know the grass one is big because it keeps me in mind. It just keeps me – it's not even a red flag. It's more of knowing my client.
How about consultations? Do you charge?
I do not charge. I do not charge, but I do let people know that I'm very busy. It could take me 2 to 3 weeks just to get to a consultation. So I let them be the deciding factor in that. I let them decide, hey, is it worth my time? To me, a 2-week consultation is the same price to me as like charging $50 to be out there tomorrow, to be $100 out there tomorrow. So when I tell a customer immediately, I was like, hey, it could be 2 weeks till I get to you. To me, that is the same equivalent as offering somebody $50 to $100. So it automatically, you know, kind of puts in their mindset, they're going to have to wait for it. They're going to have to put in a little time and effort to actually get to me. So I do not charge. The only thing I do really charge for is 3D renderings, because that takes me not like an hour. That takes me like a full day to, I mean, probably 3 hours tops, but it takes me about a full day, what I tell customers, to actually complete these 3D renderings. That's about the only thing I charge for through my consultations.
And that's like, it's almost like vetting somebody with that wait time. Cause obviously if they're willing to wait that, then they're most likely an interested customer for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. And you don't have to sell somebody like, man, I mean, most hardscapers, I mean, none of us are really hurting for money. $50 to $100 to do a consultation. That's the same thing as vetting them to me. You're not worried about getting that $50 or $100. No one cares about that, especially for the size of jobs that we sell. So to me, I would rather make somebody wait for my time versus charging them for my time. Because it shows that, you know, that, hey, when our project starts, hey, we've got a 4 or 5 week lead time. You're going to have to wait that 4 or 5 week time. I already know these guys are willing to wait for the job that they're getting. Charging somebody, there's a lot of people that have money, and there's a lot of people that offer me thousands and thousands of dollars to just to start their job sooner. And I can't do that. So it's not always about money. It's about that wait time. It's about that relationship, seeing and understanding your customer and making sure that they're going to realize like, hey, if it rains today, I'm not going to be there. Somebody with money that just wants to throw money at you, they don't see that. They don't see, hey, I don't care if it's raining. You should be here. So I think waiting your customer out is going to be a lot better effective method than charging your customer.
And what about that initial meeting? What are you walking through with that customer? What questions are you asking to know what you're putting on that initial quote or that design? Can you talk us a little bit about that initial consultation?
Yeah. So one thing that I've done very, very well, I think, is presentation. When I meet a customer, I mean, I've got a really big black lifted truck. Like, I've got a very professional truck, very sleek logos. When I always get out, you know, I do have on boots. So I look professional, but I also look that I can do the job. So I always wear boots. I always wear a polo, wear a nice hat. So I think the big thing with meeting a customer is presentation. That's your first reaction. I don't know if you guys have seen all my equipment. All my equipment is blacked out. Everything from my MT85s to my skid steers to my excavators. And I get more compliments on my presentation almost as much as I do my jobs. Consultation, you know, I look very professional getting out there, and I've already done my research. If I know their address, I'm taking a satellite image, a screenshot of their house. I'm putting it on paper. I'm listing out all the questions that I'm going to ask them about the project they're going to have. I'm going to have their name and address on every sheet that I have. I want to make sure to have I use a lot of Hilti products, man. One of the biggest compliments I get off on consultations, that I've got a laser range finder from Hilti, and I don't use a roller anymore. I just have this little thing, little pocket size measure that goes in my pocket that I measure everything. So pretty much the big thing with that first consultation is selling yourself. Stop trying to sell the project, because with hardscaping, you're not doing a $2,000 concrete patio, guys. You guys are doing a full backyard oasis. You're actually building this person their dream backyard. You're not, you don't, all expenses paid, you know, like you have to understand that you're building that relationship so they trust you enough to spend $100,000. They spend $50,000. So sell yourself, be approachable, ask them how their day is going. Ask them about their jobs. What do they do? What do they do that? Then once you build that relationship, you like joke about coffee in the mornings, you joke about the sprinklers, anything like that, then dive into the questions. Ask questions. Us as hardscapers, we've done 1,000 different projects. We know how to do 1,000 different projects. We know how to design it. We know what flows better. But man, like one of the easiest questions that I ask people, do you like squared corners or do you like curves? As simple as that, you can read a customer very easily. Just ask questions, ask so many questions. What do they picture? Do they have Pinterest? Can they look at pictures on Pinterest that, you know, kind of conform to what they want? Do they want landscaping? Do they like pink flowers? Do they like green stuff? Ask them, fill out the customer. You can always do follow-up questions through text, through calls, through stuff like that. But that first consultation to me is getting to know the measurements of the job, getting to know the grade of the job, and getting to know my customer. All that stuff, like I can go ask a customer has like, hey, you need a chlorine or salt cell. I can do that through text messaging. It's not about that. It's not that first consultation is about getting a site prep. So you actually seeing everything, you getting visual eyes on everything. How's the access to the yard? How am I going to have to crane in a pool? Am I going to have a dingo versus a skid steer? You know, how am I going to access this project? Second one is getting to know your customer, knowing what they want, knowing the styles that they like. Are they older? Are they younger? Do they want less steps? Do they want more steps? Do they like waterfalls? Do they like a bunch of extravagant stuff? Do they have a kid with special needs? That was a big one that's came up this year. We had to sell a beach entry pool because one of their children was in a wheelchair. And, you know, before I was like, oh, you got kids, you got a 5-year-old. Let's do an 8-foot deep pool. Let's do a waterfall. Let's do a diving board. But I didn't know that customer before I started suggesting that stuff. So one thing is just that big consultation, knowing your customer, getting a site layout, and making sure you follow up from there.
Yeah, it's obviously that, you know, you're trying to build a relationship with the customer before you move on to, you know, talking about the project, talking about money. Extremely important in that sales process. When it comes to designing and that you're ready to present that design to the customer, how do you do that? Do you schedule a second consultation or do you send it to them? How do you present that to them? And then what do your payment plans look like with a customer?
So as far as my designing, as far as that, I've got a great program that I'm pretty sure a lot of people have. With designing my pool projects, I've got Pool Studio, which allows me to do patios and stuff as well. One thing I have really done that has sold my jobs more than anything is that 3D rendering. And I don't just 3D render their project. I get the grades. I do the geo mapping. I make sure I get their house. And the biggest thing that I can tell any person that is 3D designing, don't just do the project, do the house. Match the house perfectly to measurements, to grades, to the size, style of the brick, the window colors, the stuff like that. Because when a customer is able to see that project with their house, like I can design a house so good that a customer really looks at it like, is that actually a picture? Is that a design? Like the big thing to me, I would say 75% of my time on a 3D rendering is designing the house. The hardscaping stuff to me is easy. That stuff can be changed easily. That can do that. The house is what takes a long time. But being able to render that house so people can see what their project looks like in reference to their house is the number one selling point that I have that no one else in our area does. They sell just the project. They'll render up, you know, the patio, the pool, the pavers, the fire pit, stuff like that. The big thing to me, a big selling point, is rendering the house. It takes a little bit extra time. You're charging for it anyways. I charge about $1,000 for my 3D renderings, depending on the customer, depending on the size of the project. But I also take that off the price at the end. So after I 3D render everything, I don't hand draw anything anymore. I don't draw anything out. If it's very simple, I just kind of paint it out on the ground for them. Like if they want a 12 by 12 patio, I'll paint it out on the ground and that's what you're getting. If you want me to 3D render it, I will. It's going to be $1,000. But almost all my pool projects before anything like that, I 3D render everything. And this does one or two things. This also gets a confirmation with the customer that they know what they're getting. They know exactly what it's going to look like. As long as they initial that, and by the time we're done with the end of the project, you can compare the two and it looks exactly the same, then there's no questions asked. There's nothing like, why is this different than that? Why is this shorter than that? If you 3D render it exactly a replica to your project that you're installing, I mean, you save yourself. The second point is for my guys. I charge $1,000 for this, but you can guarantee you that my program has construction plans on it. So they can see all the measurements. They can see the grades. They can see the design of it. They can see where steps are in versus where steps aren't. It just saves yourself. Spend the time, learn how to design, learn how to do that. After I get done designing the project, I send it immediately to them. I try to get designs back very quickly because after that first consultation, they're itching. They're biting at the bit. They want to see something. So I try it, man. There's some nights that, like last night, I tagged you guys in a post. I woke up at 1:30, just couldn't sleep. Went to bed at 10, woke up at 1:30, went to the gym. There's a lot of nights like that. When you have stuff on your mind, you got to get it off. So there's a lot of nights that I stay up rendering. And I do that because I can able to focus on the rendering. I'm not having calls. I'm not having distractions. You know, 11 o'clock at night, nobody's calling you. 1 o'clock in the morning, nobody's calling you. So that's my time. That's me time. That's time for me to do stuff. So I try to get those things. I try to get that lead very quickly. So within a week is probably the longest I've ever taken with a 3D rendering, but I try to get it back within a couple of days because it's fresh on their mind. And we had that conversation. I get it back to them. I take really good pictures of the 3D rendering. I'll be like, all right, what do you guys think? Do you guys have any suggestions? Do you guys want to change anything? Blah, blah, blah. And that is probably the coolest thing that separates me from anybody else, is having that 3D rendering. The person looks at it and be like, oh my gosh, this is my backyard. This is what I want. I don't want to change anything. That's probably the biggest thing I can say with the design aspect of it. The next question I think you had was payments. All right.
Yeah. Like what's your down payment? How do you schedule all these payments when a customer is ready to sign?
So it depends on the project, to be completely honest. Like our pool projects, we have a lot of financing partners too. Like we can finance through Techoblock, we can finance through Bellegarde. We also finance through Lions Financial. If we ever finance through any of our partners, we go off of their terms. So like Lion Financial, just to give you guys a rundown, they're a great company for unsecured loans. They are a very legit company. They hold the contractor accountable. They make me take pictures through every stage before I'm paid anything. They're great to work with. They do really good rates for unsecured, but in doing so, like I don't get a payment until I start digging. So once I start excavation, once excavation is complete, they give me a 1/4 payment. A lot of my pools are financed through Lion Financial. So that's why I'm giving you guys the breakdown here. So with Lion Financial, I don't get a deposit to order the pool. I get a deposit when excavation is complete, a 1/4 deposit when excavation is complete, 1/4 deposit when the pool is set, 1/4 deposit when coping is done, and 1/4 deposit when the project is complete. Techoblocks, they have their own payment terms. I can pretty much make up my own. Bellegarde's kind of the same way. But if I was doing my own individual contract and wasn't doing a financing partner, the customer was paying in cash, pretty much what I do, I try to do everything in quarters. I do a quarter when the contract is signed and to get you scheduled. What that does for the customer, it orders all their materials. It lets them know that their spot is reserved on a schedule. Doesn't give them a specific date. Never give a person a specific date, by the way. A specific date to actually like a roundabout date. Like, hey, you're between this person and this person. When we complete this project, you'll be here. We're approximately 4 to 6 weeks out. Then we do a quarter deposit when we start. We do a quarter deposit depending on the project. So like if we're doing a pool, we do it after the coping. Or if we're doing like a patio, we do it through like, I'll make a standpoint, like after the fire pit's complete, after the retaining wall or pondless waterfall is done. I'll make a step on my third payment. And then the fourth payment will be upon satisfaction completion. I always put that satisfaction completion in there so the customer realizes, okay, I'm not taking your final payment until you're happy. And by doing that, you build that relationship. You make them understand that you're going to give them that warranty paperwork. You're going to give them the information that they need. If they have a block that's broken, you're going to be able to replace it. So I always put satisfaction completion. And that's really helped out a lot. A lot of people notice using those adjectives in there. But that's how my payment plans work. If we do like smaller, like under $10,000 jobs, I probably do everything in thirds. A third to schedule you, a third when we start, and a third when we finish. But most of my pull projects, which we're doing a lot, 90% now, is going to be in quarters.
And what percentage of your customers do you find wanting to finance through you as opposed to paying, finding their own financing?
I would say probably 50-50. Most people know before they come to me what they want to do, to be completely honest. Most people are open to suggestions, and those people I kind of lead them on to, like if they want to pool, I lead them straight to Lion Financial. We can do pool patios and stuff too. But if they're open to financing, I send them straight to Lion, which is, I would say it's probably 50%, 50%. And I have other customers, especially my older customer, they already know what they want to do. They're like, nope, we're doing a refinancing of this. This is how much we have. This is blah, blah. They already know all the answers to their finance before they get there. But a lot of my younger, like the 30s generation on my pool projects, they're usually open to suggestions. They're like, should we seek our own financing? Should we go through Lion Financial? And to me, it doesn't matter. To me, sometimes I prefer customers to get their own financing because I know that they're paying me that first deposit if they go with their own financing. Like Lion Financial doesn't give me that first deposit. So there's a lot of, I really don't care how people pay me as long as I get paid.
Yeah, absolutely. So continuing with this payment topic, a lot of horror stories that contractors have to share has to do with payments. But my next question is, do you have a horror story that you'd want to share with us? Doesn't have to be around payment, can be about on the job site, on the job, whatever it may be. But do you have a horror story you'd want to share to kind of warn a contractor to put in place safeties to avoid this or anything that you could share with us?
I don't have like some big horror stories, but I've got two contracts sitting right here in my file folder right now of jobs that were completed about 4 or 5 months ago that I have not been paid for. And this was a defect from a subcontractor. And I did a couple jobs. So the big thing is when hiring subcontractors that I can give any advice is check their work before you pay them. That's all I'm saying. I had a good friend of mine I thought he was a good friend of mine, to be honest. He did concrete. And I had some big projects going on that needed maybe a small walkway, a little $2,000 walkway, something super easy, super simple. Another one was another like 100 square foot concrete patio. It's same guy on both projects. And he did them back to back, asked me for payment. I paid him because he's done work for me before, did a great job. I get calls from both of those customers afterwards. The jobs were god awful. I mean, something that I couldn't even imagine. I mean, my little brother, you know, that 20 years old, never done concrete before, could do that bad of a job. And I bit the bullet on it. And it's kind of one of those things where I know I had a contract with them. The job was technically done, but me as a company, I'm a lot bigger than that. And one of them, I didn't get paid $12,000, and the other one I lost about $4,000 off of one guy. And because I didn't have a contract with my subcontractor holding him liable, I was held liable for that. And that's something I stopped doing concrete. I was like, nope, I'm not using any more subcontractors. Concrete is done. And it kind of ruined me from that because there's a lot of people that ask me, you know, hey, I just need a small sidewalk. I was like, nope, I don't know anybody. Can't reference anybody. I'm not doing it. So that was probably one of the biggest horror stories is I paid this guy for the job that he did. On one of them, it was a $2,000 job that he did, but the customer refused to pay me my one third payment of $14,000 because of the job mess up. So if you have subcontractors, no matter if you know them, no matter if they've done 1,000 jobs for you, check their work before you ever pay them. Almost all my subcontractors now, most of the time they're a lot medial and they deal with me, so they're a lot minimal compared to the major contract. So almost all of them, I do not pay any of them until they finish their project. And I pay that day. That day, as soon as I verify it, I go and pay them. Make sure your subcontractors are always paid, especially the ones that do a good job. So that was one thing that I've learned. Be careful of the subcontractors you use. If you do use them, make sure they do good work. And if they do good work, make sure you pay them immediately.
Yeah, good advice. And how about any talking points that you wanna go over in terms of things you live by on the job site, in terms of installation, products, tools, any type of equipment that you live by on the job site? Do you want to talk about anything like that?
So I still have my other business. So it's tough for some of my guys to see this, but I've got two businesses that I still run. That one of them kind of runs itself, but financially backing me. So when any money that I make with my DNR hardscapes, with my hardscape business, I put all my own money back into the business. I'm trying to grow this thing as fast as possible. I'm trying to grow it as big as possible. In reality, I'm giving my guys the best of the stuff. Like I said, all my stuff is blacked out. I've got tint on all my vehicles. I've got the nicest trucks. I've got the nicest, IQ saws. I don't know how we've ever lived with them beforehand. Pave tool. I've got everything that they offer. M-Quip with the vacuum pumps. I don't really live off one brand of equipment though either. Like, I've got Bobcats, I've got New Hollands, I've got Caterpillars, I've got Husqvarnas, I've got Steels. I'm a big advocate of Hilti. Love Hilti to death. I don't think anything matches Hilti. So sorry for everybody else that doesn't use Hilti. I just try to stay ahead of the game. I try to do a lot of research. My foreman, Brian, he's probably my gift from God. He runs all my actual projects. He's the man that's on the ground at all point in time. But having him on my team, he's allowed me to do the research. He does a lot of research on his own too, but like new equipment, the block clamps. We use a lot of those when we're doing retaining walls. The screed systems. I mean, anything that I can give to my guys to make their life easier. Like, I mean, right now, man, here in Tennessee, it's 99 degrees with like 100% humidity. I can go out to consultation and be dripping sweat within 5 minutes. So I know that my guys, you know, they're out there laying pavers all day long. They're out there building walls. They're out there shoveling gravel. They are hating life. I know it. So I try to take care of my guys the best as possible. I try to give them the best of equipment. I try to give them everything that they could ever desire to make their job easier. I've actually thought it about in the past, like in the next year or something, I want to transition into just making useful things that people haven't thought about hardscaping, just to give my guys the leg up. So we use a lot of different equipment. There's not a lot of, I will say this though, hold on, I'll back up. Inlight, I am a huge fan of Inlight. We try to use Inlight on every project that we do. Those guys are awesome over there. I don't use any other brands of lights besides them, just because I'm a huge advocate of what they're doing. Everything I've ever installed from them have been incredible. I do use a lot of different pavers. I use Tecoblock, I use Belguard, I use Unilock, but I'm never partial to one of them. There's me personally, I like one way more than the other, but as a customer, some people like more the rustic feel versus the modern feel. As far as quality, I think they're all great. It also depends on your region. I mean, I live in Clarksville, Tennessee. I've got a Belguard plant in our same town. So Belguard products are like, I can snap my fingers and I can be there to pick up any product that I want. There's no shipping involved. There's nothing like that. So availability is a big one for us. But it's also quality over availability. Sometimes when it comes to shipping, sometimes I have to wait 4 weeks on some pavers to get in. Which especially with this COVID pandemic that's going on, I think everybody is in that boat right now. But as far as products, materials, anything like that, I mean, I just try to get the best of the best. I try to stay ahead of it. I try to do my research. And I mean, that's just kind of where we stand as a company.
Yeah, I bought a Hilti Quick Cut 4 years back now. And man, I don't think I'll ever go back to anything else. That thing is a beast. And what about your next piece of equipment after that skid steer? What did you buy? What was the next purchase?
I've got a really good New Holland rep here in town, and I was really sold with them. So I bought a skid steer. I bought a New Holland excavator with like a big dump trailer and stuff like that. And man, right now, I mean, I've got a Caterpillar 259. I've got a New Holland 245, which is the biggest skid steer that New Holland makes. I've got an MT85 Dingo. I've got a E55 excavator from Bobcat with like tilt bucket, everything like that. I've also got my first original New Holland. I think it's like a 37 E37 that I have. I've got probably 1, 2, 3, 4. I got like 7 different trailers, enclosed trailers, gooseneck trailers. One big thing that I've always become a huge advocate is a deck over bumper pull trailer. If nobody has that, they need one, especially for hauling pallets and equipment. Then we got 1, 2, 3, 4. We got 6 trucks that all my guys drive. So, I mean, I spoil my guys. If they ever say otherwise, I swear, they're definitely going to get a unpaid week off, because I try to give my guys the best of the best stuff. And I think they really appreciate that, because they understand how much I give back to them. And I mean, they do a killer job. I mean, any of the projects that you saw that we've done, I mean, I design it and I give a little critiques here and there, but those guys are the ones that's hands on do it every day.
And you've talked about a few different people in your life that you've been shouting out through the episode. Do you have anybody else or anybody that you want to go over one more time and give them a shout out in terms of, you know, people that have mentored you, people that you look to online for inspiration, anybody like that?
I'm one of those guys that I'm very self-driven. I mean, I do look up to people. I do watch people. I try to, I don't want to say manipulate, not replicate people, but I try to live by their standards. I will say 100% PJ Short with AR Stoneworks. He is the only reason I'm even doing what I'm doing. So he gets the most credit when it comes to the hardscaping world. Mil-Spec, Brian Bose with Mil-Spec Landscaping. He's done a great job mentoring me. He's an old military guy. And he's guided me a lot with more of like mental stuff than it has actual hardscaping stuff, which, because he doesn't do hardscaping. But as far as like the Instagram world, stuff like that, man, Jack with Imagine, dude, I follow those guys. I'm like, just give me a couple years, guys. Just give me a couple years. They do a phenomenal job. All their projects that I've ever seen, I would love to get out to one of their projects to look at it. But I think Imagine does a really good job with theirs. That's probably one of my biggest like Instagram crushes, is watching their page. I mean, sometimes I have to limit myself to some of the content that they post. But as far as that, I mean, I follow Mass Hardscapers, Premier up in, I think, Rhode Island. I follow a bunch of those guys. I mean, even Black Sheep Skin, I follow those guys. I mean, those guys, they give really good quality content. They do a great job. You guys, I mean, I feel like you guys, with the big names that you guys have got on your show, I feel like you guys have done a great job with educating new hardscapers, have done a great job with pretty much giving us the experience of what it is to actually be a hardscaper. Because some people, I mean, I probably 9 out of 10 people that I talk to during the day don't even know what hardscaping is.
I appreciate that. I do. And yeah, definitely some great guys to just follow online and to get the inspiration from, but also see how they're operating their business, because you see a lot through the stories, through the posts. And as we close down this interview, Dylan, I just have one last question for you. And that's, knowing what you know now, what is that one thing that you wish you'd known from the very beginning since you started your company? Anything, could be anything related to business, whatever it might be. But what's that one thing that you know now that you wish you knew from the very beginning?
Well, besides just from when I started my business, if I was to go before that, which is hopefully no parents are listening, I would have never went to college and I would have never went to the military and I would have went straight into hardscaping. That's probably my big one is, but I say the one since I've started my company is everything in the business world, when you become an entrepreneur, is about taking risk. Don't be afraid to take that risk. I bought a skid steer with a brand new daughter on the way and I knew I had to do something. I took that risk, and I mean, I've tried to really live by that. If I see an opportunity, I take it. If I see something, I don't hesitate. I know my gut, it's right. I'll figure it out later. Sometimes that's got me into trouble, but it's kind of like not having regrets of taking that dive into something that you're unfamiliar with. And it doesn't have to just do with hardscaping. I mean, it could deal with everyday life. It could deal with anything like that. Don't be afraid to take risks. No business owner has ever got far in life without taking risk. I mean, that's what being a business owner is. It's about taking risks. It's about taking judgments that you feel is right versus what somebody else didn't think was right. I mean, if it was easy, everyone would do it. So I think that would be the big one, is just making sure that if you think it's right, if you know you can make it work, just do it. Just dive into it and do it.
Excellent, excellent advice throughout this whole episode. We appreciate your time here, and let our audience know where they can find you online, where they can check out your work, where they anywhere you want to lead them to.
I'm a huge advocate of Instagram. I love Instagram, even though that's not where I get my leads from. So if anybody's listening to this, DNR Hardscapes, D-A-N-D-R Hardscapes on Instagram. And then my website is www.dnrhardscapes.com. Just like it sounds, D spelled and out. That's pretty much where we probably post everything that we do here.